And welcome to Inside Ivy Hoops, podcast about Ivy League basketball, something that is pretty hot right now. We'll get into why momentarily, but not to waste any time, this is Mike Tony, editor of Ivy Hoops Online, joined by IHO writer extraordinaire Rob Brown. Rob, how are you, sir?
I am doing fine, Michael. Thank you. It's great to see you, or hear you, I should say. Just want to let everyone know that I am coming from the home district of Congressman-elect George Santos, and no matter what has been said, truth, not truth, embellishment, he has not once said that he has hit more three-pointers for Columbia basketball than Abby Sue or Matt Olow.
Well, that would have been... even more of a dead giveaway than what we've already been offered from Congressman-elect Santos. Well, that's how we kick off another season of Inside Ivy Hoops. never know what you're gonna get. Hopefully you can rely on what we have to say. We try to tell the truth here on Inside Ivy Hoops, and fortunately, there's a lot of good stuff, a lot of good truth to be had. No reason to embellish or paint a brighter picture than we already have got. It's a strong league right now, is the bottom line, men's and women's. I want to highlight the fact that on the men's side, in the KenPom rankings, the Ivy League is now 15th nationwide out of 32 conferences, in that sneaking into that upper half after being at the top of the lower half the past couple of seasons. The Ivy League right now, just ahead of the Big West, Southern, Mid-American conferences at 15th at the moment. On the men's side, if you look at the NET rankings, you've got two teams in the top 100 out of the Ivy League. And, one of them might be surprising. One is Yale at 37, and the other is Cornell at 98. Not where they were expected to be. The Ivy League preseason media poll did not tab Cornell as one of the title contenders, certainly. But Brian Earle continuing to do a remarkable job in Ithaca. Princeton just outside the top 100. Actually, Harvard is ahead of Penn in the NET or net rankings by 66 slots. Harvard at 150, Penn at 216. Of course, Penn narrowly tapped to win the league in the Ivy preseason media poll. And then you've got Brown, Dartmouth, and Columbia rounding it out. Brown at 225, and then Dartmouth and Columbia sub 300. Let's start there, and we'll certainly have plenty of time to delve into some similarly excellent rankings on the women's side, particularly at the top of the league. It's a very strong league at the top, and some improvement in what's expected to be the lower half as well. But staying with the men for a moment, Rob, what do you make of all those rankings? Do you think Cornell is for real? Do you see a cluster at the top of the league? How does the men's side, what are your takeaways at this point as Ivy League play fast approaches?
Right. I mean, I guess the first thing I think is that paraphrasing of Ben Franklin's, in this world, nothing can be said to be certain except death, taxes, and James Jones at the top of the Ivy League. They lost a lot at Yale, Swain, Gabadon, but it is just next man up at Yale, so it doesn't surprise me at all that held their own, obviously, you know, I think exceeded high standards, and they even exceeded that. When I look for the conference schedule, I think a lot of people are saying, well, there's six teams battling for four spots, and I kind of look at it as one of those spots is locked at Yale, and I don't know if it's one or two, although I feel it's number one, but I kind of look at it as five teams battling for three spots. You know, the consistency of the program just always jumps out at me. Rebounding, passing, solid defense, don't turn the ball over, get high percentage shots. You know, every year you get that consistency from Yale. And even with Matt Noling, you know, an all first team all Ivy performer out for the last few games with a bicep injury, I believe, you know, they still haven't missed a beat. And they have an outstanding front court, great wing play, solid guard play. There's nothing I'm surprised about with that, and I think they are. I still think they're the top team in the league. Cornell, in answer to one of your questions, yeah, am I surprised? I mean, I guess a little bit, but not really. Brian Earle was Coach of the Year last year, well-deserved, and you know, I just think he's an outstanding coach, and I hope Ivy League fans appreciate him and get to see Cornell, because I just don't know how much longer he'll stay in the Ivy League. You got to think that some more high profile league, you know, will find a way to take him away from Cornell. It's just outstanding. I think in the media day conference call, he was maybe being coy, but wasn't really sure what they were going to do for their style of play this year. But thankfully, they went back to last year's up-tempo game. I think their adjusted tempo is top 30 or around the top 30 in the country. You've got 10, 12, 13 players a night that can put the ball in the hoop and get serious playing time. Greg Dolan is doing a fantastic job for Cornell. So, I think they've gained a lot of experience from last year's experiment, and I think also from that really close semifinal game against Princeton in the first round. So I am not, I guess maybe I'm a little surprised, but not really, and I do expect them to be in the battle for the Ivy tournament and maybe even a top spot. I think ESPN earlier in the season had an article that said, who's your sleeper team in every league? And it was Cornell for the Ivies, and that makes a lot of sense. Princeton, again, like Yale, reloading. You know, they lost a lot of outstanding players last year, but they are anchored by Tosin Owoman, you know, one of the best you know, front court players in many years in the Ivy League. Langborg is still there, you know, being able to hit from the outside, although not as efficient as last year, but he's still putting up a lot of points. Matalaka, you know, one of those glue guys, really outstanding, you know, high energy players. The defense is there year in and year out. You know, maybe I think they've come back a little bit just because they lost Jalen Llewellyn and Freeburg, you know, they lost a lot, but they're another consistent program. Penn, what can I say? It is like kind of like a lot of consistency. So Yale, we have a consistent idea. Princeton, and I think with Penn also, the offense is a little bit better this year. They are, of course, led by Jordan Dingell, who is just, you know, just an offensive machine. Just, you know, amazing the number of 30-point games, high 20-point games he can get. Overall, the offense is a little better than last year. The defense is a little better than last year, but still not improved enough to really, in my mind, challenge for the top of the conference. I do think they have what it takes to get into the tournament, but I just, at this moment in time, I just don't see them getting to the top unless something different happens, and maybe that's getting some more rim protection from Max Lorca-Lloyd, just some kind of game changer. Harvard, you know, tremendous game, tremendous two-point offense, but the three-point offense is really struggling. Defense, great as always. Brown, you know, amazing defense, one of the top rebounding defensive rebounding teams in the country. The offense is you know, got a little room to improve, but I do think over the last few games they have been getting better, and they, you know, they really challenged Northwestern on the road this afternoon. So I think if you're Brown, you've got to be optimistic that the team is trending up as they head into Ivy League play this weekend. Dartmouth and Columbia, that's a toughie. I don't know where Dartmouth is at. Lost a lot of, you know, really great players, and you know, I don't know if they've really replaced them. And Columbia, a lot of great young talent coming in the pipeline. Jim Engel's recruiting well, as he always does, but as typical of the last few years, the results are just not there in terms of the wins and the wins. So I don't know where that program, you know, makes that change. So a lot of similar trends as past years. Maybe, I guess, in the big picture, Cornell's probably the biggest change to the typical way we look at things in the Ivy Leagues.
Yeah, well, one thing that jumps out to me that in terms of solidifying Yale's slot in the top four, which, you know, as you said, death and taxes. We know the James Jones factor, but something else that may be a little harder to detect, but maybe not if you've watched them this year, is the fact that you know, Yale's got a strong defense. They've got a, you know, this is a defense oriented team that, you know, that's kind of what they hang their hat on. They're very good at you know, limiting offensive rebounds. Are strong on the defensive glass. They're very good. Their perimeter D is excellent. You know, they don't, you know, not a lot of reckless fouling. And what makes it the more remarkable is the fact that you know, they're a pretty young team. You know, they're sub 300 in Division I experience. I think they're, you know, closer to 350. But if you look at the rest of the top four in the Ivy League, and this is certainly not true every year, you know, the rest of the top of the league, you know, has offenses that are better than their defenses, and defenses that are, at least on paper, have been kind of mediocre so far. Cornell is a sub 250 defense. So is Penn. You know, they've had struggles on the defensive end. Princeton's defense is not really maybe at the same level as their offensive efficiency is. You know, Yale, that's the one area where Yale really stands out. Now, you do have you know, Harvard and Brown kind of flip that script, where these are more defense-oriented teams, but, you know, their offenses are, you know, that have struggled so much, as you alluded to, that, you know, it's those two teams, I think, have some ground to make up, which is why they're not, you know, they're not cracking that that top four on paper so far in at least in the KenPom ranking. I don't know if I trust the NET or the NET decision that you know, Yale is almost 200 slots better than Penn and Brown. You know, I don't think there's that much daylight between the teams, but I do like the fact that they are high on Cornell, because I don't think there's anything flukish about what the Big Red have done in terms of hanging with Miami, you know, winning at Delaware, winning at Colgate, you know, easily taking care of Lehigh last week. You know, this team is definitely trending in the right direction. You know, their only losses are to ACC foes. You know, standing at 9-3, with you know, a game in against Binghamton that's actually going on as we speak. at Newman Arena. But yeah, I mean, I think it's, we'll see how things shake out, but yeah, it seems to be Yale and a surprising surge from Cornell that it seems to be legit, and Princeton hanging up there as they always do, in the upper echelon, and Penn dealing with injuries and trying to put things together. What do you if you had to quickly break down a come up with maybe a list for all Ivies on the men's side going into league play, what who are some names to that stand out to you that you think will be the names to remember after this Ivy slate is over?
I think, if you look at the top teams, you have to go with Matt Noling at Yale, Tosin Olomon from Princeton. I mean, these are people who've been there before. Jordan Dingle may just be the, I don't know if you add the offense and defense, although his defense is definitely improving, but offensively, by far he is the most stellar player in the conference, but he's certainly in the mix. I think Dolan and Cornell, Chris Ledlam, is an outstanding player. He was hurt for a large part of the of last year, and it's great to see him back. Kind of like Noah Kirkwood, just really dominating. He gets a lot of usage for Harvard, and it just puts up big numbers night after night. So I think those are some of the people that are just, the first ones. Keno Lilly Jr., Rookie of the Year last year at Brown, is certainly having another outstanding campaign. So those are the names that jump out to me. Clark Slackard, also at Penn, who's moved from the bench to the starting lineup. Again, like Dingle, has been in and out of the lineup with injuries during the first couple months of the season, but another amazing offensive talent for Steve Donohue. So, I'm not sure what you're seeing also, but those are some of the names that are jumping out to me.
I'm glad you mentioned Chris Ledlam because I feel like he's flying under the radar, maybe because he was, sidelined for almost all of Ivy play last year. That really he's, Harvard is relying on him, banking on him. He's, one of the top 25 players in the country, nationally, in shot percentage of shots taken, percentage of team shots taken. He's really dominating, and the offense clearly flows through him, but he really can do it all. 27 points, 15 rebounds, including 6 on the offensive glass in Harvard's overtime win at Maine last night. Big win for Harvard. Harvard lost a lot of feels like they've lost a lot of close games in recent years. I know, down the stretch they had that close loss to Princeton at home. They had a close losses to Yale in back-to-back games last February. If they can get over the hump and they've got Chris Ledlam, a hard charging front court presence to help make that happen, that could certainly be big for the Crimson as the season unfolds. Want to switch over to the women's side now because there've been similarly gaudy results from them so far. Looking at the NET rankings, the net shows Columbia at 34, leading the conference. It should be noted, with Princeton at 53, Harvard just inside the top 100 at 96, Penn at 120, Then you've got Yale at 185, Cornell and Brown just inside the top 250, and then Dartmouth sub 300. Princeton stands at 8-3 after an impressive win at Seton Hall, a near comeback to remember at sixth-ranked UConn, with Carla Berube going up against her alma mater and her college coach Gina Auriemma in a game that won't be soon forgotten earlier this month. And then their most recent outing, a win over Rhode Island at Jadwin with a buzzer beater from senior guard Grace Stone. That's one of the highlights of the non-conference slate on the Ivy Hoop scene for sure this season. Columbia at 11-2, winners of eight straight victories that are certainly noteworthy over Seton Hall. You've written about Rob the revenge tour teams that Columbia has lost to in past campaigns. Of course, Columbia, going on an unprecedented run to the Elite Eight of the WNIT last year, getting that win over Seton Hall last month after last season's WNIT quarterfinal loss. That was a big one. Also wins for the Lions over Miami and UMass that are definitely significant non-conference wins. Then you've got Penn lurking, maybe a little bit further down from that tier, but acquitted itself well in a trip out to the Golden State at USC. Harvard has some of the best young talent in the league with Harmani Turner. What do you see on the women's side? Any storylines at the top? Do you think that Columbia has surpassed Princeton, or what? Who should be considered the favorite, and how do you see the top half of the league as it is entering Ivy play?
Right now, Columbia is ranked. They've gotten votes in the top 25 poll. Princeton started out the season number 25 in the country. I think in the College Insider mid-major top 25, Columbia's number two, Princeton's number four. In a way, similar to Yale, Princeton has that amazing consistency, and in a way, they get the, because of that. There's a tendency that they're under the radar. So, they played an incredibly challenging non-conference schedule, and ended up 7-3, and yet, it seems like a lot of the national conversation in terms of Ivy teams is more about Columbia. I think ESPN has them as the automatic qualifier, not Princeton, even though I think Princeton's in their bracketology is the 9 seed and Columbia is the 11. So these are two heavyweights, just eyeing each other, and everything is kind of leading up to January 6th at Jadwin, when the two teams finally, meet this season for the first of at least two, maybe even three matchups. Do I think that Columbia has done enough to overtake Princeton? It's hard to say. Ultimately, I know that's a cop-out answer, but I do think Princeton is not as strong as last year. And I apologize to George Clark for saying that, but I think it's tough to, when you lose Abby Meyer, who's doing really well at Maryland, they didn't have an immediate replacement for Abby Myers. There are talented players at Princeton, but nobody at her level. So that is a big loss. But with that said, they have Ellie Mitchell, one of the best rebounders in the country, Julia Cunningham, who's incredibly experienced and plays well offensively and defensively, Kate Lynch, and who really is one of the great clutch performers. Yesterday against against Rhode Island being an example of that. And then you have people like Grace Stone, who are super experienced, and when it came time for a last second shot, she was able to make it calmly and secure the win. But when you look back to last season, the gap between the two teams, despite two really strong records, there was a big gap in those games. Columbia played well at moments in those three games, but Princeton, you know, clearly outplayed them. So I don't know. I think the gap is narrowed, but I don't. Until Columbia can actually beat Princeton, I can't say that. I think they are both going to get into the NCAA tournament, but I would not be surprised if the league ends up, co-champions this year. They split their games, but I do think right now Princeton's probably the stronger team, and I'm just going to go more on the defensive end, even though Columbia is definitely improving on the defensive end, and their offense is tremendous. But when you're relying on the three-pointer as much as Columbia, it might go cold one evening, and Princeton does not excel necessarily at the three-point line, but that's part of their DNA. So I think, you know, if they're not shooting well from outside, it's not a surprise, and they know how to adapt from that. But I haven't seen Columbia in a situation where if they're struggling from the outside, you know, can they recover? And that will be an interesting, you know, storyline, you know, for January 6th.
Yeah, I think I feel like Harvard is, flying a bit under the radar. Princeton, Columbia, Columbia and Princeton, rightfully so. I think clearly they're in their tier of their own, and I agree with you that I think it's, you know, folly to definitively say that one is significantly better than the other at this point. It does seem that Princeton has maybe taking a step back with the loss of Abby Myers, and Columbia just getting basically stronger with experience, roster returning pretty much everyone, but that kind of begs the question, and I feel like you named a lot of the potential All-Ivy standouts on the women's side that, will be coming to the fore again and again as league play commences. But, looking ahead to this weekend's action, there are a couple of intriguing games right out of the gate. On the women's side, Princeton at Harvard, Saturday at noon, followed an hour later by Columbia at Yale. Those are two huge games where the two league favorites hit the road, heading up to New England for games against two schools that are looking to establish themselves under new coaches. It's going to be interesting to see how things play out. But do you think the favorites survive those games, those trips?
I apologize. I didn't answer the other part of your question about the top four. If I go back to that for a moment, I do think, you mentioned about Harvard being another one of those teams under the radar, and I think, you're right about that. They beat Rhode Island. They beat Boston College. Beat Boston University by 15 a few weeks ago. They beat I think they beat Maine by 28. Maine, traditionally one of the top teams in the America East. I think it's interesting. Carrie Moore comes in, assistant coach with Courtney Banghart at Princeton. She was an assistant at Michigan. I think she's creating a team that is less reliant on the three-pointer than Kathy Delaney Smith was coaching them last year. A little bit more on the defensive end, a little bit less on the three-point line, and it's doing well for them. You mentioned about Harmony Turner, obviously, like probably the top point guard in a conference with a lot of great point guards. Kitty Henderson at Columbia, just jumps out at me. And I'm forgetting somebody. I'll probably remember in a little bit. But Jenna Clark at Yale. That's what I was thinking. But Turner's fantastic. Mackenzie Forbes is a great all-around player. Lola Mullaney can hit the three when necessary. And I think they've got Elena Rodriguez moving into the starting lineup. So they finally, after all, due to injuries and transfers, they've finally got some inside presence. And I think that's really important. When you think about this weekend's game with Princeton, it's a really interesting start. Yale, if people remember, Harvard almost beat Princeton in the semifinals of the Ivy tournament. It was really the first team to truly challenge Princeton in many years. Leavitt's Pavilion is a very hard place for the opposition. Harvard has a tremendous home court advantage. They get a great crowd. Even a small crowd really seems large in that arena. So I think things are really set up well. I still think Princeton's going to win, but I think it's a really interesting challenge, for the opening game. In terms of the next level, in that second level of the Ivy teams, I'm right now looking at Penn as the number four team. Kayla Padilla, of course, still a tremendous offensive threat, one of the top scorers in the league. I think what's really helpful this year is they now have some more offensive weapons. It's not just her carrying that load. Over the last few games, Simone Sawyer, who I believe is a first-year player, has really come on strong and really been able to kind of help Padilla, on the offensive end. Jordan Obi has also, on the defensive end, had some help. So they got a transfer in from the University of Florida, Floor Tunders. I think that's a real big benefit. So Penn has been getting better over the last couple weeks. I think that's a really, as these players are getting more comfortable with each other, I think they're moving up. You talked about Yale with Delilah Eshe, her new team. Big blow to lose Camilla Hemsbow, probably the top front court player in the league, who had a season-ending injury and will look to do a grad year in a more major conference next season. But that's a big loss. But she's been able to kind of regroup the team, and they're kind of continuing that pattern that Allison Guth had, like a real high-energy, determined team. They always seem to kind of play better than you think in every game, and they tend to drag teams down to their level, and they really get to control the tempo of a game. And I really, enjoy watching them, try and get these teams to kind of play Yale basketball, which is great. Jenna Clark, as we said, one of the top point guards in the league. They have Kylie Capstraw, who is a first-year player, averaging over 12 a game. She has won the last three Rookie of the Week awards for Yale. That's been a real big plus for them. Nyla McGill is the second leading rebounder in the league. A lot of great things going on for Yale, but I do think that loss with Emsbo is going to just be a little bit too tough ultimately. But like last year, with those three teams, it's going to be, I think last year it really came down to Harvard beating Penn at the Palestra was the only difference. Maybe it was the fact that Yale swept Penn. I take that back. This year it may come down to something similar. I do want to give a bit of a shout-out to the rest of the league. I think Brown is really another one of those under-the-radar teams. This is Monique LeBlanc's third season in charge, but second, actually coaching a team in the conference play. And they've almost matched the win total from last year. I think their defensive numbers, which is something, you don't really think about for Brown, but their defensive numbers are, I think their rating is probably the best since the 2012-2013 season. So that is a team that is definitely getting rebuilt in a very fast way. So that's, they may be a spoiler this year. Cornell with Dana Smith, they lost 3/5 of the starting lineup, 2 to graduation, and Olivia Snyder is no longer with the team. I didn't see her on the roster any longer. She had a season-ending injury last year. So they've lost 3/5 of the starting lineup, but Dana Smith's playing a more up-tempo offensive game. The defense is there as usual. So Cornell, even though I don't expect them to compete for the Ivy tournament, they are definitely have battled a lot of injuries, a lot of changes, and have had a better season than I thought they were going to have this year. Dartmouth is probably the toughest situation. Adrian Schiebels is still in that rebuilding mode, and the team is taking small steps. Are they better than last year? Yes, but I don't know if it's a significant growth, and so hopefully they'll be more competitive in the Ivy League. Going back to this weekend, we talked about Princeton, Harvard, Yale, Columbia. This year it's going to be, I believe it's at Yale. It's at the John J. Lee Amphitheater. Columbia, every time I see them, they are locked in, and they don't take any opponent too lightly, even when they're favored, and they might be favored by a lot. Sometimes they don't play the full 40 minutes, but they regroup, and they, you know, whether it's the coach pointing it out or the players pointing it out amongst themselves, don't expect them to be, you know, to be slipped up by Yale. I guess Cornell, Dartmouth, not sure which team is home. Is it at, I think it's at Cornell this weekend. I think Cornell's got a little bit too much for Dartmouth. The other game, Penn Brown, as I said before, Brown can be a spoiler, but I do think because it's at the Palestra and Penn has been getting better and better each week, I don't see a surprise there. I think Penn will hold serve in the opening game.
Yeah, there's intrigue in all those games, and I do agree that there's clearly Brown is a better team than they were a year ago. Things are starting to come together, I think, for the Bears. It's a new program, but defense has long been the issue for Brown, going back to the Sarah Bain era, I think tightening that up under the new regime has been key, and will continue to be key as Brown gets gets more experienced, and this program comes together.
Yeah, I think when you think about those teams that Sarah Bain had, I mean, this is a defensive league. Mike McLaughlin's got Penn playing much stronger defense. Princeton, Columbia is getting better. I think that's when things really started to take a turn for Columbia. The defensive side is really important, and the fact that Brown has been making that change, I think that's a great trend. Maybe not for this year, but I think as you keep looking at the next year or two, I think that's going to be a really, really big advantage for them.
Right, absolutely. And shout out to a fellow Uniontown native Maya Murray on that on that front for Brown holding it down inside. Switching over to the men's side, definitely some intriguing matchups this weekend. Yale at Columbia Saturday at noon, followed by Harvard at Princeton. Always seems to be Harvard and Princeton. Always seem to be some really tight games when those two teams get together. It's been some classics over the recent years. Cornell at Dartmouth, definitely a kind of a gut check game for Cornell. Dartmouth's never an easy place to win, and if you're the Big Green, Dartmouth's had some promising early starts in Ivy play in recent years, and if they can win a defensive battle and make it maybe a lower scoring game than the Big Red would like, that could be something could happen there. Could be a bit of an upset. Penn at Brown, that's been a key matchup in the race for the fourth seed in Ivy Madness in recent years, and that game will happen at Brown on winter break, as a piece filed today, published today, written by Ethan Jobson, noted, probably, not coming on a back-to-back during winter break, maybe not much of a home court, home atmosphere advantage for Brown in that game against Penn. But having said that, what do you expect from that matchup, which seems to be a especially crucial one in the Ivy League tournament scrum, and any does anything else any other matchups on the men's side this
Yeah,
league
I guess.
this week weekend come to the fore for you? What's most intriguing?
Yeah, I think, when I look at the, I mean, it's certainly the Brown Penn game is the one that's the highlight for me. I think if I, Yale Columbia looks like a pretty big mismatch right now. Even though it's on the road for Yale, it's the numbers are just, the eye test, the numbers all, favor Yale. Princeton Harvard, as you say, there's always a close battle, but Harvard's Achilles heel is its 3-point shooting, and that, going to Jadwin makes 3-point shooting even more difficult. So, I just don't see. I think Princeton had a bit of a lull a few weeks ago, and maybe they had a little, tired stretch around the beginning of finals, but I think they've recovered from that, and I don't expect. I mean, I guess I shouldn't say Ivy League games are almost just like James Jones at the top of the league. Close contests are always a given in Ivy play, but I do expect Princeton to come out on top. Cornell Dartmouth, I think there's a difference to this year's Cornell team. On top of the things you were pointing out about the 9-3 record, two of those losses were close. All three to ACC teams, and two of them were with one possession. This is a team that they, there's never a time to count them out. They have come back many times late in the game. So, that's not a dimension I really saw to them previously. So there is a confidence. I think they're playing well. They share the ball, and with that many players in the rotation, even if one or two are not having a strong night, there are always plenty of people to pick them up. So I do see, I do see, even though, playing in Dartmouth is never easy, I do think Cornell is going to start off on the right foot. So that leaves Penn and Brown. As you said, year after year, it turns out like this is a battle for fourth or fifth place. And I think if you're Brown, you really need this game. Of course, it's nothing is a must win on the first day of the season, but I thought last year they came in. They had played well against Maryland. They had a good non-conference schedule. Penn was in a more of a struggling mode, and Penn won that game at the Palestra. And I think if you're Brown, I think you need to hold court. It's really important. In terms of the numbers, it's kind of like strength and strength versus weakness and weakness. So, Penn's offense, top 80. Brown's defense around top 100. Offense, from Brown is low 300s. Penn's, high 200s. You kind of have to. So it's in some ways it's a fairly even matchup. If you remember last year's game, it came down to the wire. Just, amazing play after the last minute. So I guess I don't expect anything different this year. I think it's from terms of Ivy play, it's like must watch because it's going to be close and it's going to come down to a possession or two late. If Penn is healthy, if I know Jordan Dingle didn't play against the Division III opponent Wilkes College the other day, hopefully they were just resting him. But if he and Slackard are there, and Martz is doing a dependable job at the four spot, and Nick Spinoso, holding his own in down low. I think ultimately Penn's going to have just a little bit too much, which is just seems to be another inevitability we've seen over the last few years, is that Penn just has a little edge over Brown. If Brown can, however, change the conversation, I think that it throws a big wrench into the Ivy tournament conversation, starting on day one.
Yeah, well, as you alluded to, Ken Pom really doesn't know. They They have it as a pretty much a toss up. They predicting a 69-68 Brown win in what is, as you noted, really a kind of a strength on strength, weakness on weakness matchup. You know, with Penn's offense being its calling card going up against Brown's defense, where they stand out more, that would seem to be the you know, where, I don't know, where the rubber will hit the road. If Penn can get any solid 3-point shooting, and they have had some success shooting at Brown in recent seasons, you know, that would seem to bode well, if they can get that going. But yeah, Brown can pull this out. You know, I mean, if you're Penn, you know, you're looking at this, and I do agree with the piece that ran today on our website, especially the, you know, talking about the observation. What I agree with is the observation that, you know, these schedules being lopsided, you know, aren't the greatest, you know, aren't the greatest facet of the schedule. If you're Penn, you're just kind of looking to survive this opening stretch where you've got four straight away games and six of the first seven away from the Palestra. So if you can, you know, if you can get over this, if you can come out of the gate with, you know, if you can squeak out a win at Brown, you know, they've had a lot of success against Cornell under former Cornell coach Steve Donahue. That's their next game on Friday the 6th at Cornell, and then at Columbia, which, you know, never easy, but at least on paper would seem to be a winnable game for Penn. And then you've got at Dartmouth, you know, another game that they would, they're favored on paper. You know, if they can try to come out on top in these road games, that would give them a not only a cushion but some significant momentum going into what is literally a home stretch. You know, as the rest of the Ivy slate unfolds, you know, that would be huge for Penn if they can kind of get this rocky schedule. And then on the flip side, if you're Brown coming into this key clash, you know, you've got to try to stack some home wins, hold serve, as you said, and you know, try to build up a bit of a cushion, knowing that you're going to be hitting the road come February, and you know, having to fight it out, and you know, go into the stretch run away from Providence.
Yeah, and I guess I would say that to the idea of the schedule, and the schedule has, you know, there are lots of teams that have these big stretches of being on the road or being home, but I will say to people that this is the exact mirror opposite of last year's schedule. So they just took all of the, I guess you could think of it, if you're the Penn men, you're following the women's schedule from last year. So every time you were on, so it's the schedule's in the exact same order. So if Penn had that long opening road trip at the beginning of this year, last year they were, you know, they had a lot of games at the Palestra. So it's just the mirror opposite of last year's schedule for every team.
Yeah, and you can look at that either way. You can say, well, it always balances out because, you know, you're just playing what the opposite of last year was, or you can say, well, it never balances out because it's always lopsided year to year to year. You know, I guess I probably fall in the latter camp, but you know, there's no doubt you get more of a cushion in terms of rescheduling. it would seem under the new status quo. And I hope that's an option that doesn't have to be exercised nearly as much as it was last year with COVID reschedulings, although we already have seen that this year already Dartmouth having a game that fallen to a COVID cancellation. We'll just have to see and keep our fingers crossed that doesn't happen. That game I'm referring to was to be played actually today against New Hampshire at Leed Arena. That game's been postponed. The team's saying that they're committed to finding a date to play. For now, no makeup date's been announced. Tickets will be valid for the makeup date, but yeah, want people to be healthy. Don't
Think
want
positive.
schedules to be wrecked either.
Yep, think positive, test negative for
Exactly.
2023.
Yes, there you go, and yeah, that seems to be a hopeful, helpful note to end on. Unless any other last second observations, Rob?
Just a couple last second things. I do believe tickets are on sale for the Ivy Madness at Jadwin Gymnasium in March. Great seats still available. Should be exciting. Same pattern as last year. The two women's semifinals on Friday, the men's semifinals followed by the women's final on Saturday, and then the men's final on Sunday. Should be a great weekend, as we already know that there's a lot of really solid teams battling for the games, and they were with a lot of fun last year. I don't expect it to be any different this year. And this is the last year of the big, I guess if you will say the teams that the programs that are most excited to host the tournament. After that, it gets a little bit interesting as it moves to places. I forget who's supposed to be on tap for next year, if it's Brown or Dartmouth or Cornell. I know Columbia is the last one of the eight teams, so we'll have to see how things progress next year. As we'll also have to see, because I think the relatively new schedule was a 2-year experiment, and we're now starting year two, so we'll have to keep our eye open on the league to see what happens for next year. The other bit of news, as we pointed out last week or 10 days ago or so, Charlie Baker, former JV and varsity player at Harvard, is now the incoming president of the NCAA. Yeah, those are just some little items just to throw out there, but nothing else that I can think of at this moment.
Well, that yeah, well, Char yeah, Charlie Baker. I feel like that was longer ago than it actually was. But yeah, it's the holiday season distorts everything, all sense of time and space. But yeah, Charlie Baker. That's not a little. That's not little news. That's huge news. He's stepping into a world of rapidly growing questions over the future of NIL and impacts and antitrust labor concerns and big TV packages and basically every other conference other than the Ivy League transforming and
Yeah, I guess just a little add-on. I know, Richard has brought this up a number of times. Of the antitrust exemption for the Ivy League has expired, so
Right.
that is certainly open for the potential for scholarships in, merit scholarships, academic and non-academic, and obviously the non-academic would be athletic scholarships, as a possibility for Ivy League programs. When I ask people around the league, I usually get either no comment or it's probably not going to happen for a while, but if ever. So, that's another thing we should just be keeping our eye on, if not an actual decision, but at least maybe the conversation, moving more to the forefront.
Right, yeah. Well, and we have on the Ivy Madness front, we have the IHO Twitter, noted and directed folks to where, tickets are on sale through the league. Ivy Madness will head to Brown next season, going up to Providence. That will be interesting, and that will spark many a conversation over, what that's going to be like, what to expect, and the wisdom of that, or lack thereof, depending on your point of view. But yeah, Ivy Madness, it's up for grabs. It's up for sale. Just like a lot of things. So yeah, but well, hey Rob, thank you so much as always for the insight. It's hard to believe we're upon another season of Ivy Hoops, but again, now that we all know what it's like to not have a season of Ivy Hoops, we can appreciate it that much more as we try to take away some token of normalcy from the phenomenon that is Ivy League basketball. So thank you so much, Rob.
Thank you, Mike, for your wisdom and your guidance. Really appreciate it, and enjoy being on the show with you.
Well, I don't have much of either of those, but I offered what I could. Mike Tony, editor of Ivy Hoops Online, signing off. Thank you very much for listening. Take care.